Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Are we on? It's all kinds of interesting kerfuffles. So today, we are sucking the chi out of up-to-no-good U.S. intervention in Venezuela, and we're hosting John Kiriakou and perhaps, after the break, Kevin Zeis and Medea Benjamin in the Venezuelan embassy. Kevin writes, the main purpose is to stop the takeover of the embassy by the opposition, the fake government that President Trump is trying to put forward as part of the coup. We plan to stay. We plan to resist. We'll risk arrest if necessary, says Zeis, lawyer and activist, told Sputnik on Tuesday. So we are welcoming first a CIA whistleblower turned democracy advocate, educator, guide, John Kiriakou, in his fourth Radio Kahoot on the Visionary Activist Show. So welcome, John.
Thanks. Glad to be back.
Oh, that's excellent. All right. Well, we're triumphing over all kinds of technical things, but you can hear me okay. That's great. So I saw you last night at the Venezuelan embassy. I did not know, maybe many Americans did not know, that the Venezuelan diplomats had been ordered to leave.
Yeah, they had been ordered to leave. In fact, I think the final day for them to leave was yesterday. And the U.S. has withdrawn its diplomats from the embassy in Caracas as well.
Right. So there's our allies, Kevin and Medea, at the embassy, who they may call in after the break. We'll see what's what. But yeah, no, you gave a splendid talk last night. Here we are, eager to suck the chi out of tyranny, exhale it into democracy. We're just adding a little bit of our pragmatic mysticism to it, to animate the global awakening of democracy and leadership dedicated to collective well-being, everybody. But you did give a little short, like, how many interventions has America done, you know, and you asked the audience, and we all start off with Iran, I guess, right? Is that
right,
the first in the modern world?
The first covert action program that the CIA was ever involved in was in 1948, less than 1 year after the CIA was formed with the National Security Act of 1947. In 1948, the CIA spent $100,000 all in cash to steal the Italian elections away from the communists, who were leading in all of the polls. It was a democratic communist movement, and to illegally hand that election over to the conservative Christian Democrats. It's the first time that the CIA was involved in an election, and it was the first government that was essentially stolen by the CIA.
Right. So I understand your exasperation with MSNBC and all mainstream news, and even on occasion Democracy Now, you know, going, wait, you know, Russians interfering with election. I think that might be worthy of looking at, but not outside of context of the drug companies, the corporations influencing the thing, the Koch brothers, the whatever, and the history of this that we are laying forth, the first election that America messed with. So 1948 is the first election that the CIA newly created, really, right?
That's right.
That's right.
So that the conservatives were put in place. Italy soon after joined the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, and the communists were relegated to the back benches of parliament. It was only 5 years after that that the CIA actively overthrew the democratically elected government of Iran. That was Prime Minister Mossadegh, on behalf of the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company, which became British Petroleum. This wasn't even a U.S. foreign policy covert action program. This was done strictly for the oil, and it was done as a favor to the British government.
Right. Well. Again, we're all intertwined because my childhood friend, Anne Roosevelt, her father was Kermit Roosevelt. And so even though we were like 3 years old or something, I did say to her, your father reminds me of a large rabbit in a bathrobe with a gun. I knew, because he was a henpecked wussy, you know, and it didn't take much then, right? Because it was just, they failed the first time, and the Shah was not that interested in being, he was off in, I can't remember, Monte Carlo or whatever, going, oh, well.
Right.
And then they gave it another time in which they, what paid a very little amount of money to do riots and beat people up and have, you know, and take over the press and stuff, right?
That's absolutely right. You know, Kermit Roosevelt was almost single-handedly responsible for the overthrow of that government. And it wasn't until just before his death in the 1970s, the late 1970s, from a nursing home, that he finally gave an interview to Robert Scheer, then of the Los Angeles Times, expressing regret. Regret is nice, but it's too late for regret. Here we are, more than a half a century, well more than a half a century, after that government was overthrown, and we still have not recovered from that terrible, terrible idea.
Right. And I think you know, the banality of evil. I mean, I did know him as a little girl, and he was just a kind of like, he was a wuss, right? And it's kind of this model, like, it doesn't take much. And you were animating the CIA for us and many of its callousness and how bad plans come up, and we might want to bring that up too. But it's also like, and after Kermit Roosevelt did that with very little cash, and he was an oil executive, you know, the Dulles brothers said, now on to Guatemala. And at that point, Kermit Roosevelt said, no, I'm going back into my shell now, and handed it off. But so Guatemala is the next one, right?
Guatemala was the next one, followed very quickly by the Dominican Republic, by El Salvador, and then again by the Dominican Republic, by Honduras. It was just a long, long line of CIA interventions and coups and covert action programs aimed at these governments, mostly in Latin America. But as I mentioned last night in my talk at the Venezuelan embassy, we also can't forget about the coup in South Vietnam, the coup in the Philippines, the coups in Greece and Cyprus by 1974, or 1967, 74, and 74. This is an ongoing policy. The policy was to overthrow governments if you just didn't like their politics, with no thought to the long term, with no thought to the blowback, the unintended consequences. And as I said, as a result, we're dealing with crises now around the world of our own doing, but that doing being decades ago, in some cases generations ago.
Right. Well, remember the first time I hosted you on the radio, and you got to explain to us how gung-ho CIA you were, and we got to hum the Mission Impossible theme, dun 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 dun, which is you know, cheesily stirring, right? But you know, that's what maybe where our first con was, because the Mission Impossible really was, you know, Latin American government leaning to the left, eliminate them. I mean, it really was that kind of level. But let's also just to note the resonance that the overthrow of Allende in Chile was on September 11th, just to note, and the Pentagon was built on September 11th, and just as a quirky resonance to it. But yeah, the coup in South Vietnam and the Philippines. So so there is an appropriate moral complexity for everybody to learn now, and all Americans may it be, because Maduro, not completely wonderful person, but democratically elected, right? Let's
see, and that's the issue. You don't have to like Nicolas Maduro. You don't have to like his politics. I think he's been a terrible manager of the Venezuelan economy. He probably means well, but he's trained as a truck driver, not as a government bureaucrat or economic manager. But with that said, the man is the democratically elected president of Venezuela, whether you like his politics or not. He represents the internationally recognized government of Venezuela, and Juan Guaido does not. I mentioned in my speech last night, there are only three legal ways in which a country can interfere in the internal affairs of another country, and that is if that country invades or attacks you, if you are invited in by that country, or if the United Nations Security Council gives you the permission to move into that country. Any other intervention is very simply illegal. It's as plain as that.
Right. So what is your feeling? Like when I arrived at the gathering last night, which was great, and many wonderful people, and the publisher of Covert, great magazine, many people, yourself and Kevin Zeese and Medea Benjamin, who's indefatigable. And it's true that I did walk through Secret Service on my way to get there. And there they were clustered, and you know, to me, they were very polite, like, oh yes, clear the path, make way for this person. But just give us a little, because like, oh well, what's that? They're protecting something. Oh no. So what shall we envision and as a reality, and then what shall we envision as a desirable, no matter how impossible that might seem?
Well, the desirable is the easy answer. The desirable is for the United States to back off. Very simple. To back off. I think that it's going to get worse before it gets any better, because the U.S. has decided to not just recognize a literal nobody by the name of Juan Guaido. It's also decided to force Guaido, to impose Guaido on the other countries of Latin America. Now, many of them have just fallen in line, and they've done exactly as the United States has asked them to do by recognizing Guaido as the president of Venezuela. He's not the president of Venezuela. He has not been elected to anything. Nobody has voted for him. He is a recent grad student from George Washington University here in Washington. The State Department and the National Security Council just arbitrarily chose him as if out of a hat and said, effective immediately, you're the new president of Venezuela. Well, you know what? That's not democracy. That's not the democratic process. That's just not the way it works. There's a constitution in Venezuela, and that constitution has to be observed. Even in the event that Maduro had been overthrown by the military, which is what the White House was hoping would happen, it didn't happen. But had it happened, the constitution of Venezuela says that whoever takes over in the event of a coup, has 30 days to call democratic elections. Well, you know what? Let's give the Trump administration the benefit of the doubt. Let's say that Juan Guaido is the president of Venezuela. He's already in criminal violation of the Constitution by not calling for democratic elections. So, look, let's just call this what it is. This is a coup attempt. And so far, knock on wood, it's failed.
Right. And there were, you know, very jolly, kind members of the Venezuelan embassy who made an appearance there to be thanked. And so are they all packing their bags? Are they all leaving the country? What's the situation?
Yeah. In fact, it's my understanding that they're all out effective today.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Yeah, they're all out of the country effective today. And that's
Wow.
why this embassy security collective has been invited in by the Venezuelan government to protect the embassy from a takeover of right-wingers that are based here in the United States.
Right. Well, it was a poignant thing in which there we were in this, you know, lovely room with great pictures of Chavez and noble sayings around, and at the end they said, "And who wants to take any of these photographs and these framed pictures to keep them safe?" So it is like,
exactly.
Oh, it's an wow.
I was taken aback by that as well, but that really put things into perspective. Diplomatic relations have been severed. We do not have diplomatic relations with the elected government of Venezuela right now, nor do they have relations with us, and that is because of an act of the State Department and the White House to sever those relations. And so they had to make a very difficult decision. They came to a difficult calculation that the Marshals Service, the Secret Service, the State Department Bureau of Diplomatic Security is eventually going to breach the embassy. They're going to violate the sovereignty of Venezuela by breaching the embassy. And I think the Venezuelans were afraid that they would trash the place. And
right.
So all of us took bits and pieces home so that when the embassy is finally returned to its rightful owners, we'll return its property and it can begin functioning as an embassy again.
Right. So yes, just a little sort of micro of so many things of, you know, kind of a war, kind of like leaving Vietnam, grabbing things, whatever, I'll, you know, keeping as much safe as possible. I guess that's the quirky dynamic. And and blessed, you know, Kevin Zeese and Medea Benjamin, indefatigable co-founder of Code Bank, and, you know, Kevin, political activist who's worked on many things, you know, and co-director of Popular Resistance. They may be calling in. We'll see what happens after the break. But yeah, and so, but also it was really useful, I think, you know, to guide us into the intimacy of the banality of evil and the bureaucracy of the CIA, in which you said, you know, there are many people there who want to be patriotic, good humans. But then you said when you move into the covert ops department, it's different. Yep. And I don't know if it's too tedious for you, but it's not for us to just guide us through the kind of Rube Goldberg, you know, kind sure. of banality of evil, of killing people and everything, and how a plan gets hatched up and then goes here, goes there, gets signed by the, you know, by John Bolton, gets, you know, it just, can you just run us through that scenario again so we can, you know, suck the chi out of it?
You bet. So there are two components to this. One is something that a CIA psychiatrist once told me. He said that the CIA actively seeks to hire people who have sociopathic tendencies. They don't seek to hire sociopaths because sociopaths have no conscience. They easily pass a polygraph, but they're impossible to control. But for those very same reasons, especially their ability to pass a polygraph, they slip through the cracks. And sociopaths are sort of drawn to covert operations. They're drawn to the directorate of operations. And those people are the ones who get promoted up to the top because they're comfortable clawing their way up there and stepping on the backs of their colleagues and coworkers to make the senior intelligence service. So already you've got an entire directorate full of people who literally have no conscience and are willing to do anything because they've convinced themselves that they're the good guys. That's number one. Number two is that the CIA, like any governmental entity, is a big, slow, lumbering bureaucracy. And so there's a paper trail for everything. If you have an idea to overthrow a government, there's actually a process that you go through to get permission to overthrow that government. You go to one designated office in the CIA, I can't say its name because it's still classified, and that the job of that office is very simply to streamline the plan that you bring to them. You go to this office and you say, I have a plan, I'd like to overthrow the Venezuelan government. And they say, okay, well, let us know your ideas, and you do, and then they'll write it up in a certain format that's acceptable to the attorneys. It then goes to the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel, OLC. Now, we know from the George W. Bush administration the criminal activity that took place in OLC, mostly on the part of John Yoo and Jay Bybee, the two creators of the CIA's torture program. So it goes to OLC, where the attorneys there stand on their heads to make it look like it's legal, despite the fact that torture, for example, is clearly illegal. And then once it's approved by OLC, it goes to the lawyers at the National Security Council, then to the National Security Advisor, then to the president. Once the president signs, it goes back to the CIA and CIA headquarters. I am unaware of the White House ever having turned down a proposed covert action program. Once it makes its way through that bureaucratic process, the president's signature is just a rubber stamp. And it's because everybody from CIA to DIA to state to NSA and the Pentagon and DEA and ATF, everybody's taking a look at this and they all like it and they all sign off. And once the president approves it, it goes back to the CIA for implementation. The next thing you know, governments are being overthrown.
No, I remember when you said this last night, that, and that's important for us all to know, and the banality of evil and the Rube Goldberg Monty Python bureaucracy. But might there be a kind of, you know, disgusting reverse digestive process in this case in which Trump goes, I need something to distract. Oh, what about that Maduro guy? I mean, is it likely that it started with Spanky himself?
I'm not sure if I would call it likely, but I would absolutely call it possible and unsurprising. It's a whack the dog scenario. And especially with an election coming up, what better way to raise the president's approval ratings than to have a nice, neat little war? Something that we can win quickly and easily. Look at Grenada, for example, or the invasion of Panama. Something that we can do easily with little or no loss of life. Something that makes us look tough on the international stage, and something, frankly, that causes us grave damage over the long term.
Right. Well, remember, yeah, with Noriega, George Herbert Walker Bush, they tried that in November, right? Sometimes it's like, if at first you don't succeed, and then they removed Noriega, invaded,
yes,
killed people,
correct,
and then arrested him, I think, 10 days later. That was in January. But so they tried one, and William Barr was part of that. Do you remember how? Can you guide
Absolutely.
Us through that? They will. Oh, thank you.
Absolutely. William Barr was a part of it. People forget that William Barr was Attorney General under George H.W. Bush. He's been to this dance before. He knows exactly what he's doing.
Right. No, it's the old characters. And then I want to just go back a little bit, because we both have a great affinity for Mary Meyer and for Peter Janney's excellent book. I've hosted him once or twice on the radio. Time to do it again. His excellent book on Mary
Absolutely.
Meyer, the only kind of grown up that JFK had an affair with, in which they for sure smoked marijuana in the White House, absolutely, and probably did a low-dose LSD, after which JFK gave this amazing speech at American University, so full of compassion and let's compost war that Khrushchev, compassion for the Russian people, that Khrushchev played it live in Russia, and it might have signed his death warrant. But in the great book about Mary Meyer, we get back to the origins of the CIA, which was Yale guys, you know, but at first kind of idealistic, coming out of World War II, going, we are hero Yale guys, you know, and working with the World Federalists for peace, right? And then at a certain point, right, you know, maybe just a couple of years in, okay, you're talking about 1948, the Italian elections, and we want to come back to your heritage in Greece. You know, there was, I can't remember all the evil people, but you know them, says, but of course we're dedicated to peace, and of course we need to organize it, and who better to organize it than us? And when you're really dedicated to peace, then any means necessary. And there you go, right? That's really kind of what happened. It started off with a kind of idealism, maybe, you know, that then got snookered into, like, well, you know, American exceptionalism, right? If not, you know, then clearly we're the people to do it, right? So you know, where does it go wrong? And I think for all of us, right, just to tease that, is where does the vision get corrupt through specialness, right? It's like, there we go. So we're kind of, you know, all stories lead us to all stories, but that's an important one about how it gets sketchy, how we outsource our idealism and our leadership to funky means with a kind of shiny, you know, control, dominance, power, imperialism, you know, poison apple. Yeah. Huh. Right.
Absolutely.
Well, so can we work with this mythologically? Because I love that I've often referred to you as, you know, Sun and Leo, Square Neptune, like Carl Jung. And the first time I said that, you go, yes, I know. So you are well aware of the, like Carl Jung, you might even be, you know, if Carl Jung were now, you might have gone through your journey. But it is a lifelong wondering about the power of images and symbols to rouse, even if it's the cheesy, you know, Mission Impossible music, which is very rousing. Dun, 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 dun. I also like Secret Agent
Man. It is rousing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, so is Secret Agent Man. You know, there's a life. There's a man who lives a life of danger. Everywhere he goes, he stays a stranger. It's very attractive.
It is.
Right?
It is.
That's why right now is the moon conjuncts Pluto, meaning we want positive intrigue to take all that's been seduced, because people want a mission, not a Mission Impossible to overthrow, you know, democracy and serve tyranny, but they do want a mission, you know, and that's, you know, kind of part of our dynamic to go. I love, there was a utopian Fourier who said, in any ideal community, we must allow for the passion for positive intrigue. Because when people pull off something that is really good for everybody, it draws upon more elegant parts of the psyche. And, you know, and is that, I mean, Do you feel like you have a positive mission now, John Kiriakou?
Oh, I do. I do indeed.
Ah, good.
You know, it's funny to me. I feel like I joined the CIA for the right reasons, because I'm a patriot and I wanted to serve my country, and I believed that I could do good. And I feel like that was all the case until the September 11th attacks. You know, Bill Clinton, when he was president, really did have a commitment to human rights. He ordered what was called a cull, where the CIA fired fully one-third of their recruited assets around the world because they had human rights problems in their past. So there really was a focus on human rights, and the Clinton administration really did try to do the right thing. With that said, literally everything changed on 9/11. And on 9/11, the whole mission became very simply about killing people. Nothing more.
Right. And again, it was long planned, like, because here you are, you know, spiritual cousin to Carl Jung, you know, how we got snookered. And that's also, there's this immediate circumstance about, you know, to suck the chi out of any attempt to overthrow mm-hmm. democratically elected government in Venezuela. But it does tie us to everything, like, you know, after 9/11, where grief was kidnapped. And I remember, you know, using all of my frequent flyer miles to upgrade to business class so I could speak with warmongers, and talking to somebody from Cisco Systems, and he said, we have all the contracts in Iraq, you know, for pupil recognition and everything. I'm like, ah. And I go, and when did you get those contracts? And he said, October 2000. Before the election, they got contracts for a war in Iraq. And it's like, But by the time the plane had landed, he was quitting his job and starting a B&B. So my work was done there. But you know, it's like, oh. So we do. We want a kind of festival of everything being revealed, every sketchy thing, so that, you know, all citizens fully informed going, ah, what were we thinking? And, you know, and there's so much going on now going, wait a minute, I don't remember approving of that. And that's where I just want to, you know, because part of your skill and increasing mm-hmm. artistry is to direct the attention so that we're not snookered by the carny, by the sleight of hand and the distraction. And I think that's why you were so aggravated at the overcoverage of Russia, or part of it, anyway.
Oh,
right?
Boy, was I. Oh, yeah. You know, I think there's so much out there, especially in the corporate-owned media, that is meant solely to distract us from the bigger issues. You know, we keep... I find myself dragged into debates on Twitter and Facebook, for example, about whether or not Nicolas Maduro is a good leader. Well, whether Nicolas Maduro is a good leader or not is irrelevant. The fact of the matter is, and I'm just using this as an example, Nicolas Maduro is the democratically elected and internationally recognized leader of Venezuela, whether we like his politics or not. It's as simple as that. And so, regardless of what the likes of Rachel Maddow will tell you, we have to focus on what is legal versus what is illegal. I said in my talk last night at the Venezuelan embassy, and I have repeated myself at least three times today on my own radio show, there are only three ways in which the United States can legally intervene in Venezuela, and that is if Venezuela attacks us or invades us, whether Venezuela invites us in as an occupying force, or whether the Security Council at the United Nations votes without any of the permanent members casting a veto, votes to allow the United States to send troops, which will never, ever happen. Otherwise, any intervention in Venezuela is just simply illegal. It's a violation of international law. And you won't hear
right.
that on the mainstream media networks.
Well, we're going to repeat that. We're going to take a very short break. I know you have to go pick up your kids in 15 minutes. Is that right?
At the latest, if you don't mind.
No, I don't mind. I can work it. There's all kinds of swirling around. We're dancing with everything. But we're going to take a very
Thank
short
you.
Break, and you're going to still be here when we get back from the break, and then we'll let you go pick up your kids, which is a wonderful service to humanity. So this is Caroline Casey, Visionary Activist Show, great guest John Kiriakou, and we'll be right back after this very short Taj Mahal break.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. visions that dazzle them crossed his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Ooh, chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Telegraph my indigo sky ship, make its voyage long.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Today, our splendiferous guest is John Kiriakou, fourth time on the show. He's practically a regular. He's practically a stringer for Coyote Network News. It's possible that Kevin Zeese and Medea Benjamin might call in from the Venezuelan embassy. We have John for a few more minutes, and then also Nika from Place for Sustainable Living is there in the studio because that's an important thing to do at the end of the hour. There we go. Okay, now we're back to you, John. So there's a lot of dancing and swirling, but somehow some genius is scheduling us all. So in this realm, did we cover? You did mention your Greek heritage, of which you are very proud, John Kiriakou, yeah. And you delineated also the CIA's nefarious involvement in Greece. Let's remember that. Guide us.
Yeah, in 1967, the U.S. government initiated a military coup in Greece. There had been rumblings that something was afoot as far back as 1964. Every time the democratically elected prime minister of Greece, at the time it was George Papandreou, would visit the United States, he would receive a dressing down, a tongue lashing from President Johnson, saying, if you don't get control over your communists, we're going to do it for you. Well, the communists were not in any position to win an election in Greece. There was certainly a communist party presence in the country, and there were communists in parliament, a handful of them anyway, but Johnson and other right-wingers just did not want any communist presence in Greece at all, and that just wasn't practical. Look at modern Greek history. There's going to be a communist party. Well, finally, by 1967, the U.S. government had enough, and so on the night of April 21st, 1967, the U.S. okayed a military coup. A junta of five colonels took power in Greece. They arrested and then exiled the prime minister and his family. His son later became prime minister, as did his grandson. They exiled the king, who went first to Cairo and then on to Rome. Finally, the monarchy was deposed, and there never was a royal family again. And it was 7 years of brutality and torture before the junta collapsed under its own weight, and Constantine Karamanlis returned from Paris triumphantly, and in a democratic election got himself elected prime minister. But here we are all these years later. That junta fell in 1974, and still the Greek people have not gotten over this coup. Still they hate and distrust the United States. They don't like our statues. They don't like when our presidents go to visit. There's a statue of Harry Truman, for example, in downtown Athens. And on seven different occasions, people have taken hacksaws and they cut the statue down by the legs. And it's because they hate and resent U.S. interference in Greek internal affairs. Now, Greece is just a microcosm of U.S. interference in countries' internal affairs around the world. Also, in 1974, the U.S. government overthrew the government of Cyprus, which led to the Turkish invasion of Cyprus. Now, here we are all these years later, 44 years later, and Turkish troops still occupy the northern one-third of Cyprus. There are still 1,700 Cypriots missing and presumed dead, including 14 American citizens. So, you know, we go generations after these stupid policy decisions, and we still haven't recovered.
Now, is that particular coup in Greece, is that what the fantastic movie Zed is about?
Yes. Well, no. I mean, that's what it led up to. That was about those early rumblings in 1964, where a liberal member of parliament who was barred from addressing parliament because of his left-wing politics, instead chose to address the people on the waterfront in Thessaloniki, the second largest city in the country, and was bashed in the head with a bat by a man on the back of a motorcycle. A communist was arrested. Of course, it was a setup, and in fact, it was a police officer who had bashed him in the head and murdered him. That was a man by the name of Gregory Lambrakis. He's a hero in Greece, as you can imagine, as is his son now. But again, everybody knows that this was done by right-wing extremists at the behest of the United States. And then 3 years later, the military took over.
And this is all very important, really, and pertinent and resonant now. You know, Zed is a great movie. It really takes you there. But even after that, right? The movie, which I guess came out in 1970. But
correct.
So even that event, that 1964 was the first attempt, and then 1967, and again the fear mongering about communism, right? And that's why, you know, there's a very real threat here, right, about the kidnapping of American attention, the fear-mongering about, you know, any sane, reverent common sense of Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders being labeled like communist or whatever. So we really need to suck the chi out of that, because all of these things could happen here, right? I mean, do you have a very...
I agree. And I'll tell you another thing we need to suck the chi out of, too.
Yes, good.
And that is
the fact that
this is not... a partisan issue that we're talking about. This is not a Republican versus Democratic issue. Lyndon Johnson was president when the Greek government was overthrown, and then just as we thought we might be getting over that by 1999 in Greece, it was Bill Clinton that launched a completely unnecessary and arbitrary war on Yugoslavia, which is Greece's northern neighbor and Orthodox Christian a brother. And you can't imagine what life was like in Athens. I was living in Athens at the time that we began bombing Yugoslavia, and it was like being in the junta all over again.
Right. No, and I remember, you know, these small things that bring us into Venusian intimacy with the horror. I just remember hearing about the bombing by Clinton of Yugoslavia and a family, a man who was so distraught, going, "My family's just been killed and everything's gone. And oh, here's my dog. Here's my dog, and his jaw has been blown off. And what do I do? What do I do?" Anyway, that stayed with me. It's like, whoa.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so we really, you know, we want to you know, in your evolution and your mission, you know, it's like we can't afford any of this juvenile, you know, human sacrifice to prevent dealing with real issues. We got stuff to do. We got humans to humbly cooperate with nature's guiding genius. You know, I mean, all of this is a distraction. You know, it's a horrific blood distraction, and this kind of infantile adolescent, you know, cowboyism, which you delineate so well, you know, it's like, we can't afford this. Are you wishing a, you know, everybody wake up. We can't afford this. This is infantile sociopathic nonsense. We got stuff to do.
It really is. It really is. And I'm hopeful that now in this age of social media, that we can get that word out more easily and spread truth, because goodness knows we're not seeing it in the corporate owned media.
Right. Yes, and I think discerning is good, because you were grumpy at Democracy Now! Last night, you know, and I said, why, you know, and you go, well, the Russia thing, you know, and we go, yeah, because we're discerning, and we go, yeah, but indefatigable, you know, good stuff over here, bad stuff over there. We want to not be snookered into polarity or the American thing, do you approve or disapprove of this thing within 10 seconds of hearing about it? It's like nuance. We like this thing. That sucks.
Right.
We like this over here. You know, carry on this good work. This is terrible. And then with everything, and I know I will reluctantly let you go, you know, about everything in a way, what did this want to be before it became corrupt, snookered, bamboozled, hoodwinked, you know, and to kind of cook it back? And you're uniquely, you know, qualified in your story to do that, going, you know, something spoke to your heart about wanting to be have a spicy mission that was going to do good in a kind of undercover way. And we go, that was good for a moment. Oh, no. Right. So, but what did it want to be and how to liberate it? And I guess everything, right? I mean, what does this want to be before it got snookered? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I say all the time that at the CIA, the culture is such that they teach you that everything is a shade of gray, everything. And that's just simply not true. Some things are black and white. They're right and wrong. And I decided that I wanted to be on the side of right. And I wasn't going to ever be able to achieve that at the CIA because the CIA was committed to being on the side of wrong. And so it was time to leave.
Right. Yeah. And again, you know, before I, it is time for you to leave to go do noble things. But also, you know, the discerning in all of this complexity, you know, where so many people have been turning to the CIA and the grown-up generals and the FBI going, you know, oh, thank goodness, because they have an appropriate critique of Trump, but we don't want to throw all our standards or memories or COINTELPRO out the window either, right? It's like,
right.
Whoa. Yeah, so, because I know you've been particularly distressed, or I guess many people have, about, you know, who are we listening to? You know, Malcolm Nance, I don't know, just is that crazy?
You know, who to say? I've got my own beefs with Malcolm Nance, too. It's complicated now. You can't just say, well, I'm going to watch Walter Cronkite because I trust Walter Cronkite. No such person exists anymore. And so we have to do our own research. We have to do our own background reading. We have to understand these issues on our own and make our own decisions. We have to be out there seeking the truth. You know, you can't just turn on CNN and be informed. You've got to look everywhere. Look at Al Jazeera. Look at RT. Look at Democracy Now. Look everywhere. You have to look everywhere, and then figure the truth out on your own.
That's excellent. We will do it. We will do it, Agent Ally John Kiriakou, and we will release you to go do your noble good evermore in the world. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. That's great. So we don't know. Kevin Zeese and Medea Benjamin might be chiming in. However, we have splendid allies in Studio A. Nika from Sustainable Living, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hello?
Hello, that's wonderful.
Hi.
Yes, we communicated yesterday. You sent me a thing, and
yes.
I said, what a good idea, and I never heard back from you, but here you are.
Yes,
all right,
here
so
we
it's
are.
Invisible. So wonderful. Are you there with your colleagues?
Yes, I'm here with four other amazing people.
Excellent. If you would be so good as to take over my role and introduce them and why you have a great fundraising event coming up here and how people can support it.
Yeah, of course. First of all, it's Place for Sustainable Living, and we're having a fundraising event on Friday, April 26th, and we're a part of this incredible network of grassroots organizers and groups who are working really to build a new world from the ground up. And I just like, before we start all of that and before we get our introductions, we just really, all of us wanted to acknowledge that the world that we're building, that we're trying to build together, first we recognize that we are on unceded Ohlone territory here in Wuchin, and this legacy of what we see around us is built on 500 years of colonization and 400 years of stolen labor, and that there's incredible violence in the framework of our lives today that we are trying to heal together. And each of us has this incredible vision for the world, and we're working in our own movements that aren't siloed but are united together through this mycelial network that we formed. And we're so excited to be here and to tell you about us. I'll just let us, we have more to say about that, but how about everybody introduces themselves, starting with Colin.
Hello, Caroline and everyone. My name is Colin Miller, and I'm here representing the Oakland Climate Action Coalition. And our mission is to engage Oakland residents in creating and implementing equitable climate solutions that strengthen the resilience of our frontline communities and to create a just transition, like Nika was speaking about, away from extractive economies and cultures, extractive white supremacist, heteropatriarchal capitalism, and towards regenerative local living economies that honor the rights of our Mother Earth and our human rights.
Wonderful. And this is working well as an improvisational glide in, because you are animating the antidote to what wonderful John Kiriakou and I have been kind of illuminating the up to no goodness in the last 45 minutes. And so it's like, not that, but this. Let's compost tyranny, and it's a great day to do this. Let's compost tyranny into the desirable, all-inclusive, reverent, you know, vision, which you're further animating. Thank you, Nika and Colin. And who else is there?
Right, we also have Veronica.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Caroline.
Hi.
My name is Veronica Ramirez, and I'm one of the co-founding members of PLACE for Sustainable Living here in Oakland. And PLACE stands for People Linking Art, Community, and Ecology. We're celebrating 8 years at this benefit. And it's a grassroots effort to connect with the land, connect with people, and connect with creativity again. I think we've lost that in this industrial world. And so it's about classes. We host classes and workshops on how to be more sustainable, how to be creative, how to grow your own food, whether it's a complex rooftop garden or a wicking bed or a planter box outside your window. We're here to show and teach, and we're not the teachers. The community is the teacher. They're the teachers. So we're a host site, a hub for resilience and restorative, even restorative justice, as we work with churches and other grassroots organizations. We have partnerships and allies all throughout Oakland that we're proud of building for the last 8 years, and I can mention some of them later if we have time. But
yeah,
thank you.
Thank you. No, this is wonderful. And I think there's another member of your team, right?
Yes.
Excellent.
Hi. This is Jonathan Ute, and I am involved with PLACE for Sustainable Living. I wanted to also highlight that one of the reasons why we founded this hub for sustainability was to create a place where all of the green technologies could live and reside, and people who come for either a tour or a workshop or a class could see these green technologies in action and start to imagine a world without a fossil fuel economy. And so to that end, we have everything from gray water systems, rainwater catchment. We have passive solar design that heats up a greenhouse that then heats up our barn. We have a rocket stove that is a really super efficient way to use scraps from construction sites to warm our main space. And we have a bike culture. You know, there's other ways that people can engage in not have to wait for a federal government to institute a Green New Deal. We're part of a whole network of nonprofit organizations, NGOs, that are actively doing it. We're actively living the solution. And now, you know, for the past 8 years, we've had a spot that we can call home that people can plug in. And so we're really grateful for this opportunity to speak about that.
That's great. And where do people go to see all this, to participate in this, all the green technology in one place? Where? How can they do it?
Place.community. .community okay. is a new, and it's not .com, but it's .community. So place.community is our website, and we're going to be celebrating.
We're located in North Oakland, 1121 64th Street at Marshall. So we have a street mural right there. You can come check us out if you're local.
And just say the address again.
1121 64th Street, and the website is place.community. One of our ideas is that this is not the only green living center, that actually we may serve as a model for how possibly recreation and park can do green makeovers and create green living centers in every neighborhood, because everyone has to be part of this solution. Everyone has to, you know, step up, and we cannot just wait for a federal government response. It has to come from a neighborhood level.
Right, and then just... Oh, good. And let me just slip this in. Aspiring to weave continuity between the segments of the show, because what you're animating, what we're all animating and woofing for all that you're doing is, then we won't need to overthrow the CIA won't need to overthrow governments to seize their oil. All right, now back to you. our next person. Yes.
Thanks for making that explicit, Caroline. This is Armando Davila.
Yay.
I am here representing a couple of crew. One is Youth vs. Apocalypse. I'm newly hired with them, supporting this cohort of youth climate activists who are challenging the air quality district, who isn't doing enough, who are protecting Oakland from a potential coal export, and who are raising consciousness among young people about the federal Green New Deal. But I'm also here supporting my mother, Cheryl Davila, who's on the Berkeley City Council, who declared a climate emergency and called for a citywide mobilization effort, a regional mobilization effort. And we're actually going to be hosting a regional town hall for the 8 cities in the Bay Area who signed up to collaborate towards a radical mitigations effort. And one thing that's really connected to what you've been animating with your previous guests is that we believe right now is that we can't really address our climate crisis while we're still rooted in the imperialist dynamics that is perpetuating it, both from a corporate political class who sees their profits higher than the sustainable planet, who's willing to sacrifice millions in the face of profits. And so here in the Bay Area, we're championing a prayer that essentially we're going to break formally and fundamentally from business as usual and institute a just transition to a completely regenerative economy. And we're going to do that innovatively, creatively, based on the tools and, you know, community members and institutional visions that we have here in the Bay Area. And so I just want to give a shout out to that. My mother on the Berkeley City Council, who's been powerfully championing this vision.
Yay, Cheryl.
Love you,
Cheryl
Mom.
Davila. No, that's really powerful. And then just for the, you know, astro mytho, we are all pragmatic mystics, and it's good to see you again, Armando, audio-wise. That's really great. We are collegial cahooters in a number of places. But part of the pattern right now, why it's perfect that we're gliding into place is that we do know how to do this. The dedicated magic of teasing sane, reverent common sense into actual structures, which you all are doing and making available, and the all-inclusive invitation, come this way over here, here's the better story. Mm-hmm. No sense clinging to the rocks that are falling with you, as Alan Watts says. Yeah, so that's fabulous. So we have precious time. We have 3.5 minutes. I leave it to you all how best you want to animate that, because I know you have something important coming up this weekend. Yeah.
Oh, yes, we do. We have an incredible fundraiser where we have so many local musicians and bands and artists coming together to celebrate this vision that we have at place, and that all of us have as organizers in our own hyper-localities. And at place, you know, we see ourselves as a nucleus for these movements. And we see ourselves as a resource center for these movements. And we're trying to basically fundraise so that our nucleus can be more robust, so that our nucleus can better serve our community movements, so that we can perhaps build a community kitchen. That's my personal vision as the hearth steward, is to build a community kitchen that is affordable for people to rent, so that we can feed a march, for example, feed whatever community needs to be fed. And we have so many visions like that coming from all of our stewards at place. And so we're going to have Friday, April 26th from 8 p.m. to 2 a.m. at the New Parish. That's in downtown Oakland. And do you want to kind of like a list of who else is going to be performing, or what do you think?
Well, yeah. And also just say that again. Friday, April 26th from when to when?
Uh-huh.
Let's just repeat that.
From 8 p.m. to 2 a.m.
Wow, okay.
Yes, it's a long night, and we're going to be hopefully dancing the whole entire time. And it's going to be at the New Parish, which is at 1743 San Pablo Avenue. And we will be having David Satori's Flea Market Jam playing. That's part of, he's part of Beats Antique and Dirtwire. Audio Pharmacy will be playing with us, Dogon Lights, Jennifer with Audio Pharmacy with Jennifer Johns, Samba Funk. The Hood Hippies will be our MCs for the night, which is Amani and Amutabi of BTCLN. And we're going to have an opening blessing with Canyon Sayers Roots.
Oh, how wonderful. These are all like buddies. This is great.
Yes, it's great. It's a community movement.
Exactly. The band's back together.
Yes.
That's great. Yeah, that is really wonderful. I love Canyon. That's great. Okay, we're just on our way out. I know this was short shrift, but due to some wonderful tricky trickster thing, we got to glide in and you got to put this out, and let's do more. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much, Nika, and fabulous Veronica Ramirez and Jonathan Ute and Armando Davila and his fabulous superhero mother and anybody else.
Colin Miller.
Oh, thank you. So that's great. Let's be in cahoots, and we will do more. And thank you so much for your dedication that is inspiring and your irresistibly magnetizing story in which we're all, you know, woof woof supportive and participatory. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
That's really great. Okay, team. It is rock and roll. It is, but also we should say that there the Friday, April 26th, 8 p.m. to 2 a.m. at 1743 San Pablo Avenue. That our team is, you know, is perfectly timed. Just as Earth Day was the Sun-Uranus conjunction of humans getting manners and humbly cooperating with nature's guiding genius, so tomorrow night is a great night for gathering and dancing. Perfect. We're getting lined up, the secular and the metaphysical. We are truly pragmatic mystics. So thanks, thanks, team. You know, and thanks always, Erica Bridgman. I'm Caroline Casey. We'll be reconvening next week. CoyoteNetworkNews.com. Follow me on Twitter, Stand Up Coyote. Woof, 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 woof. Thank you.